Hey, Kathy.
Hi, Bobby.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. And how are all of you? Welcome to the Upside of Down, where we talk about behavior.
We're getting a little more hyper as we get used to doing this sort of stuff, but it is all kind of serious business.
Fun behavior is a very productive behavior.
There you go. I think
we really should pepper these with all of our productive behaviors.
That sounds fabulous. So what's today's podcast about?
Today's podcast is about the functions of behavior.
The functions of behavior, yes. Or as my grandmother would have said, actions speak louder than words.
That's perfect.
It's funny, all these common sense things that my grandmother used to say,
you know?
I never realized that they had to do with behavior.
Totally. All common sense is based in behavior, like the proof is in the pudding.
The proof is in the pudding. I don't know what that means from a behavior point of view, but I bet we're going to find out in future podcasts. All right.
It's all about outcomes.
It's all about outcomes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. The function of behavior. We touched on this a little bit.
We have. Tell me what you know about behavior function.
I don't know very much. I know that all behaviors serve a function.
Absolutely.
Now you explain that to me.
Okay. Well, all behaviors do serve a function. All behavior is functional. We don't believe in dysfunctional behavior. That doesn't mean it's purposeful.
We don't believe in dysfunctional behavior? Wait a second. What about all that? We come from a dysfunctional family. That person is dysfunctional at work. You're saying that that's not true?
In different paradigms, it is considered a way of describing its an impairment-based or deficit-based description in behavior analysis, certainly in my practice, we're looking for a strengths-based approach. And as far as behavior is concerned, you can't throw behavior in the toilet and flush it down and not change it. I don't know where I was going with that.
No, but I get it. It works for me. You can't just throw away the behavior and suddenly you're a perfectly functioning organism.
Absolutely. Every behavior can change. It does. All our behaviors change over time as we grow and change as people.
Right.
We may hold on to some for a very long time, but all behavior is changeable. And the key to knowing how to change it is understanding the function that it serves for us.
Okay. Got it.
So, all behavior is functional.
All behavior is function.
Functional. So I think we've talked in the past about how behavior gets trained up in us, right?
Right.
We have a learning history, ways that we've adapted to our environments over time and over settings and with different people. All of that has created, our brain has looked for the shortcuts to how to interact with this world in an effective and efficient and reliable way. Only sometimes it did learn things that weren't so effective and efficient and reliable because we had an underlying need that needed to be met. And that was the function for that behavior that keeps it going because that need somehow keeps getting met by what we're doing.
Right.
But sometimes we want to change the behavior. Well, we need to know what that is first.
We need to know why
the underlying function of it.
Okay.
Our level of awareness about that, practically nil.
No, I can't even explain to you on any given moment why I do the things I do or what pleasure it's giving me.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof, I guess. I've never really connected my actions with my behavior in that kind of way. It's interesting.
Right.
Why we do the things we do.
And the thing, actions speak louder than words. I like that because it also gives evidence to the fact that a lot of times we will give voice to what we may think is going on or try to give an explanation or to try to get out of trouble. And we're not right. We're responding in that moment to what the environment is expecting. And we're adapting our verbal response to what is working for us in that moment. But once we say something out loud, we learn it. It hardwires in our brains. We say it out loud 3 times. It can be totally meaningless and we believe it. That's how that works. So I never ask people why Why did you do that? Why are you behaving in this way? Because you know what? I'll get answers. Everybody will give you an answer. But the level of insight of that answer is really variable.
Is the correct answer, I don't know why I did it?
Well, but you get in trouble when you say that.
Yeah.
So people learn to give you an answer that either pleases you or pleases them or keeps them out of trouble. They'll train up an answer to the question, which actually is like a red herring, right? It's misleading.
Oh. And so as a behavior analyst, your job is to try and find out what the real function of that behavior is.
Absolutely. And so you know what I use?
What?
Actions.
Oh, because they speak louder than words?
Absolutely.
Oi, oi. Nanny, hear that? You were right. Okay, so give me an example of that. So am I misinterpreting this? So say something happens and I go, well, Bobby, you know that I am an extremely flexible person and I take everything really calmly. And then I turn around and I get the wrong order in the restaurant and I kind of lose my shit. Is that, I'm not a flexible person, obviously.
Well.
Because my actions didn't support it. Is that
right?
Kind of
okay.
Right?
So nobody's behavior is that reliable, right? You may be a very flexible person, but in that moment, there may have been another function going on in the way your behavior adapted in that moment.
But if every single time I complain about the service or the food or the waitress, and I still say to you, you know, I'm very flexible and I'm very easy to get along with, aren't you critical and like, I don't think so.
Okay, so number one, never analyze my friend's behavior.
No,
so
say
really
I'm not
don't.
Your friend.
Okay.
Say I'm just that person.
I just want to be clear about that.
No, I don't want you to analyze
all
me,
right.
Seriously.
Okay, and I don't want to do
that. No, you don't want to do that. That would be bad.
And loving you is good. If I observe that, you know what I would observe? Either you don't know what flexible behavior is.
Right.
That's a possible cognitive bias that you have. That
okay.
You actually think it's something else.
Okay, sure.
That you actually learned a behavior that is very flexible, but it only has specific circumstances where you can actually elicit that behavior or cause that behavior to be expressed.
Okay.
And restaurants aren't one of them.
Gotcha.
So, no, I would say probably there are times when we're all flexible. We have certain resiliences and we have certain trigger points. Every individual behavior, such as flexibility, the ability to respond effectively to the situation in the moment, that kind of behavior is on a spectrum, right? They all are. So there may be situations where you're extremely flexible. You may be hugely flexible with your children,
mm-hmm.
but waitstaff, another story.
Okay. But the bad behavior towards the waitstaff was an action.
Yeah, and so is the flexibility. Everything's an action.
Well, I'm trying to think about where the word part comes in.
Okay, so that's where we have to be careful how we describe our behaviors, because the words even mean different things to all of us.
Of course, sure.
Now I actually define behaviors pretty finite because I have to describe them to others and I need others to. I do a lot of step teaching. I do a lot of supporting of people in their environments through parlay services. So when we do a positive behavior support plan, we need to be able to describe it so concretely and finitely, because otherwise people just think they know what the word means. But there's so much diversity in our brains.
Right.
So we cannot assume. That's why actions speak louder than words. We can all look at a behavior and we can all make assumptions about why that behavior occurred. But we all have cognitive biases in that regard. And we're going to get back to that at the end of this session, because I'm going to explain to you how that works once you understand how functions of behavior work.
Okay.
Okay, so I think I mentioned to you before that truly the laws of behavior and behavioral science, they're elegantly simple. And we layer them onto complex individuals. If we do it well, they help to illuminate what we're actually seeing, and then give us a framework for problem solving around it in a very pragmatic way.
Yeah.
Doesn't remove the complexity or the variability or the beauty of how diverse human beings are in any way. It just gives us a framework and then a technology for addressing it. So one of the frameworks that we have is we say, okay, so function, nothing dysfunctional there. And the elegantly simple part that becomes so complex when you apply it to humans is there are only four functions to behavior.
What?
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy.
That's what I said. The first time I heard it, I thought, that's crazy. That's just not true. That's just not true. There have to be more than four functions. So whenever I teach this to someone or tell it to someone, I always say, you do what I went home. And I spent 2 weeks. I enlisted everybody. And I said, look, I don't believe this to be true. There's only four functions. Here's what they are. We are going to spend the next 2 weeks searching.
Proving it wrong.
Proving it wrong. Searching for any behavior anywhere.
Okay.
That does not fit into these four categories. Guess what?
You couldn't.
Now for like a good 10 years.
Wow. That's crazy talk. Okay.
So let's look at it. Okay. So the four functions. The very first.
Is this going to be scientific talk?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. As a matter of fact, I even have a very good story that goes with it at the end.
Okay. Oh, okay. I'll wait for that.
The very first one is attention-motivated behaviors.
She just wants attention. She's just doing that for attention.
There's a term that gets used all the time around behavior that makes me crazy. I can do a whole rant on it, but you would then have to give me that sign that I'm getting too loud. And I'd have to quiet down. I could do my rant. So
maybe we'll have a special podcast later where you just rant.
Well, that's
we'll
just,
turn down the volume
you
in
could
the booth.
Do that.
And
that
you
would
just
be,
let you
I'd
go.
I just go on about all these things that I hate. I hate hearing that people are manipulative. I hate hearing that people are attention seeking. Guess what? Every human being on earth from the moment they're born, of course we're seeking attention. We want to connect with each other. We need to connect with each other. Our well-being, our survival depends on attention-motivated behavior. And so to use that in a derogatory way about someone, it doesn't sit well with me. I hear it, as you can imagine, all the time. Why? Well, because helpers who help the people who I serve and families, they just assume that everything they're seeing is attention motivated. We'll get back to that too. Let me explain. All of us have a certain amount of attention that we need. Some of us less than others. Some folks who I see sometimes in psychiatry or in mental health have been so punished with the attention that they've gotten, that they are afraid of it and they isolate from it and they avoid it. But bottom line, there isn't a soul that I've ever met that doesn't need some measure of attention to continue to survive. So we all have different rates of satiation and deprivation. That's technical terms. Do you know what?
I understand satiation and deprivation.
Right. Either we're
too much or we're not
too little. Yeah. We don't have enough. Okay. So we all have differing rates.
Sure.
And some can be a lot, some can be a little. So a lot of our behaviors are attention motivated. Most of our social behavior. Accountable behavior is often attention motivated because accountability is the ability to explain rationally and justify your actions to others and perhaps change those actions from the input of others or the expectations of others. And that's accountability, right? Well, it's an attention-motivated behavior. Altruism, an attention-motivated behavior. Altruism is reinforcing. We do it so that others help us to feel good with ourselves.
Yeah, I guess my problem is that it seems like attention motivation seems, it's a pejorative term in the regular parlance of the world that it, but seeking attention, you're saying, isn't...
No, it's a healthy thing.
Yeah.
really healthy thing. And thankfully, we have a lot of attention-motivated behaviors. What goes wrong sometimes is people don't get enough of the right attention, or they don't know how to recruit that kind of reinforcement, so they do it badly, or they've simply had to adapt to environments where they really didn't learn to do it well, and now they suffer for it. Or they have some kind of impairment that causes them to not be as good at it as they should be. I encourage staff a lot of times to teach attention-motivated behavior. Teach elevator speeches and talking about the weather. And it's a very innocuous way to recruit social positive attention. And some people really, they don't know how to do that.
No.
Which is really quite sad, and probably why they have mental health issues.
Right.
But we can teach those things. And the beauty of attention-motivated behaviors is that they're so easily reinforced.
Right.
Right? So you can train them up really well. And if you've got a problem behavior, a challenging behavior that's attention-motivated, well, it's a whole lot easier to throw in a replacement behavior that you can reinforce even better. You can teach people to recruit that reinforcement, and then it becomes intrinsically reinforcing, right?
Right.
So we don't need to manipulate those variables, right? The world just intrinsically reinforces good social behavior. So attention-motivated behavior is really healthy. Yes, there are challenging behaviors that are attention-motivated, but there are a lot of great behaviors. So that's our number one motivation.
Okay.
Well, the second one is an avoidance or escape motivated behavior. And again, we all have these too. We all avoid unpleasant or aversive situations, right?
Absolutely.
We gut it out sometimes. So answering the telephone used to be an attention motivated behavior, and the phone rang and you did not pick it up.
That's right.
A phone rang, it didn't matter what was going on, it got picked up every single time because there was no answering machine. The only way to get that human connection was to pick up that phone, and you did not ever miss it. Okay, so now what do we do? Now, answering the phone is an avoidance-motivated behavior. We screen the calls. We see who's calling through.
Yep.
We have our, what's it called? Call display,
right?
We check the call display. We don't answer calls that are blocked numbers. If they don't leave a message, it's like, screw them.
I don't even like leaving a message because usually they can see that you called, and so they're going to call you back anyway.
Exactly.
And it's more trouble to listen to the message than to just call me back.
And that's,
or probably they're not going to call back; they're going to text.
And crazy thing, we don't even listen to our messages anymore. Exactly that. I used to get really frustrated when my daughter first started doing that. She'd just call me back. I said, "Well, I left you a message."
Yeah, my mother did the same thing to me.
I'm like, well, so now I don't leave
that's
my message.
So funny.
Like,
what used to be a one thing is now a different thing.
Right. So phone answering is just a perfect example of how a behavior has changed over time. Because it was always an attention-motivated behavior and you always answered. And now we avoid answering that phone and we escape if it's an unpreferred person or an unpreferred caller.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's avoidance and escape behavior. It's a good example of avoidance and escape. So avoidance behavior, it is us just anticipating a problem or concern, and we avoid. So procrastination, another good avoidance behavior. But there are some really good avoidance behaviors too, healthy ones that we use. So we may avoid those situations where we know we're going to act badly, or that would lead us to do something we didn't want to do. So it's not a bad thing to avoid bad influences.
So
compelling problems.
Right. But like you've learned over time that 72 hours is the limit that you like to spend with a certain,
absolutely,
as a house guest or with a, you know, or the relative. And you've learned that over time, and you've just made it a point to not stay that extra day.
Exactly.
Because you want to part friends and
right.
So that's an avoidance, but it's a good behavior.
Healthy one. And we all do that.
It takes a long time sometimes for us to realize that as grown-ups, right? And also hard sometimes to articulate that to the other person. Absolutely. Who wants you to stay longer, not realizing.
Good idea to use a different behavior. The white lie behavior, I think, was.
The white lie behavior. Is that one of the four of the functions?
Yeah, that would be an attention motivated. Or maybe, I don't know, it could be avoidance motivated. I know you and I are both quite pragmatic, and you can certainly tell
it's
me.
It's taken me a long time, though. You know, yeah, it's taken me a long time, and now I will say things like, I used to feel guilty about not going to a certain event, and now I'll just say that night doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I guess that's a white lie. I'm not going to say I hate going there, but yeah, there are times when I've owned up to that, too. That's a maturity thing.
Right,
behavior. Right. I have learned from you, because I have watched, sometimes people will invite you to something and you'll just say, no. Like, oh my gosh, that's so freeing. Would you like to come to the play with me? Mm-hmm. No. Thanks for asking. Don't over-explain.
Right, exactly. And some of that avoidance and escape behavior, we're freer to do that now, especially as women. We have more freedom to be honest. I think there is a gender difference in terms of men feeling freer to just say yes or no.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny because I thought it was a maturity thing, and
it is probably in women.
Right, but it's also a gender thing. Yeah.
But it's also a gender thing too. Because there are times in our lives when we're raising children, the altruistic behavior and accountable behavior has to supersede any avoidance that we may wish to exercise.
Sure. Huh.
So
good.
Yeah. Right. Usually what happens with avoidance behavior is reaches a breaking point and then we have an escape behavior. And sometimes that can be problematic. So that's kind of what you're talking about. Sometimes your escape behaviors used to be maybe less socially acceptable,
right,
or less palatable to the person you use them with. So now the idea is to use that avoidance behavior and anticipate that there may be a problem and address it before the problem occurs. So you don't have to go to the escape behavior.
Right.
So those two behaviors are a co-occurring thing. They're all in the same repertoire.
Yeah.
Right, group of behaviors.
And again, to me, like the perception is that it's a bad thing because escape seems kind of like pejorative and avoidance seems like, but it's not necessarily bad.
No, it can be quite healthy.
Huh.
It is healthy, right? It's that spectrum that all behaviors sit on a spectrum, right? And so do all the functions of those behaviors. So the next one that we have is called a tangibly motivated behavior. The tangibly motivated behavior is one where I'm going to get something, I need tangible, right?
Oh.
I need something, money, I need things, I need procurement.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and when we're children, the first behavior we learn, tangibly motivated, right? When we start to act on our environments, it's all tangibly motivated.
For sure.
I need food. I need, right? Gimme, gimme, gimme. The two-year-old, again, who's just such a good behavior describer. Quite honestly, they're very good at describing behavior. So tangibly motivated behaviors used to be trained out of children. It was considered to civilize the child. You got rid of those by puberty, and so that kind of greediness was not considered to be appropriate. Our society has changed now. People are hugely tangibly, if I want it, I should have it, whether I had the money or not.
Right. Yeah.
It's being trained up in us. Capitalistic economies have to, so therefore we have to train up this tangibly motivated behavior.
Borrow the money for a vacation because you deserve it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Whereas our grandparents would have found that to be just so greedy and selfish and would have certainly trained it out of their children. Now, they did other things to their children that were not productive and were much better at now. But that one they would have trained out. Typically, in older adults, we still only see a tangibly motivated behavior that co-occurs with a procurement, goes along with addiction. Right? I need to get the money or the drug or the...
I see.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is...
That's a negative.
But, you know, bottom line, I've sat in a spot and thought to myself, you know, honestly, if my mother and my mother-in-law did this, they would have been much happier women. Tangibly motivated behaviors aren't all that bad either.
No, that's right? True. Carrot or stick thing, a little bit, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you can use them to reward yourself
yeah.
for accomplishment, which yeah. is a wonderful thing, yeah. right? Because then you become more successful. The outcome's great. Too much tangibly motivated behavior certainly can put you in debt and cause all kinds of huge problems if it's out of hand. But in general, it's not an unhealthy behavior. So we all have all these behaviors. The last one is the sensory motivated behavior. So sensory motivated behaviors are those things that cause us to feel good internally. So coffee, cup of coffee.
Right.
Beautiful music. Those things that just fill us with good feelings in a sensory way.
Okay.
Wine.
Sure.
Things like that. Addictions are sensory motivated behaviors, problematic ones.
Yeah.
But again, not all behavior sits on one of these functions.
Right.
Now, how that manifests in each individual is highly variable. But bottom line, every behavior you have has one. So emotional behaviors are very much sensory motivated.
Sure, yeah.
Anger can be quite sensory motivated, and some people get addicted to anger in a sensory motivated way.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about anger.
Okay.
So this podcast might go just a wee bit longer.
That's okay. Yeah. We're here.
Okay. So
I'm not asleep yet.
You're not asleep. I know you. So I have a little story.
Okay.
We're together in a very noisy place, working. All kinds of people in a workplace, and it's noisy, and we're all working together. We got this big project we're doing. And it's really great, and everybody's feeding off each other. And the boss walks into the room, and he goes into the middle of the room. He looks around at everybody, and he walks over to the table. Bangs the table, swears at the top of his lungs. Everybody in the room goes silent. Everybody in the room looks at him. Everybody in the room turns away from him and looks down at their work, and the work goes on silently. Now, do we know what's motivating that behavior? Well, if he's attention motivated, he walked into the room.
He got attention.
And he got attention. Everybody stopped and looked directly at him and knew the boss was in the room. Okay. Suppose he's an avoidance motivated guy. Suppose he's one of these guys who can only work in a silent environment and he thinks they're all screwing around. Because it's noisy, it's crowded, they're talking to each other, nothing's happening. This isn't work. Well, he was reinforced because they all went back to work. They all looked away, stopped interacting with him and everybody else, and went back to work. Now, suppose he's got a bonus riding on this work, and they got to be done in an hour or two, and it's got to be done right. And the only thing he cares about is that gets done.
So he can get his money.
So he wants them intimidated.
That's a tangible function.
Right. He wants his money. Well, he's got them focused now. There's only one thing to focus on now, that work.
Okay.
Getting it done.
Okay.
Now, suppose he's one of these guys who he just holds it all inside. He just never talks about his feelings. He's never angry at anything. Bad stuff happens to him, and he's like, just rolls off his back. But every once in a while, all the MOs are there. There's a lot of pressure with this job. He didn't get a good night's sleep worrying about it. He's really at his wit's end, and he needed a release. And every once in a while, this guy just loses it. And people accept it about him because he's the nicest, easiest guy to get along with in between. Never a bad word. People just get used to that. He'll be fine in a few minutes. Just need to give him his space. But he needs that kind of cathartic, emotional release from all the tension that this project has caused him. So he was reinforced by that sensory motivation. There's a moral to the story. Actions do speak louder than words. We cannot make assumptions.
That's right. I was just going to say, and does he know?
No.
No, he doesn't know why he did
it. He has no clue.
And does he go home and go like, oh my God,
yes,
why did I?
He knows why. He's blaming them, every one of them, right?
He thinks that's the reason.
They weren't working hard enough. I needed to get their attention. They weren't working hard enough. I needed to get them back to work. They weren't working hard enough. I'm not going to get my bonus if they don't do their job. They weren't working hard enough. It's my job to put the fear of God into them.
Wow.
No, he doesn't know, but he was reinforced. And that consequence, that function that got reinforced, is maintaining that behavior in him. And here's my final kicker. We all have a preponderance of one of these. One of these is stronger in us than all the others. Typical people have all these behaviors. I will tell you, I see people with huge problem behaviors that have lost all functions except the one that's not being met because their entire life is spent trying to meet the underlying need that's never been met. So they don't have all these, and that's why they're not functioning well and not considered typical or normal.
So the only thing that works for them is that one motivator.
Well, it just, all their behavior starts to get streamed into meeting that function, right? And these are folks I see in psychiatry, right?
Okay.
So anyway, but for us, typically, we have them all, but we have one that's stronger than all the rest. And I'm sure all of us as listening to this say, oh, I know what mine is. I certainly know what mine is. You probably know what yours is. Well, what's going to happen is you're going to look at behavior, problem behavior or challenging behavior, and you're going to make an assumption.
Of course.
And what's the assumption you're going to make?
I'm going to assume that they're doing it
for the reason
I do it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so true.
You are going to assume that they did that because, I'm going to go out on a limb
here and say,
Kathy, you're attention motivated.
I could have told you. So we think they did that because they want attention. And maybe
we could be so dead wrong.
Oh, man. How are you supposed to know? I mean, I get never assume.
Your mindfulness will improve about these things. It starts with you stopping the assumptions.
Right.
And understanding that you may not understand what you're looking at.
Yep.
Maybe there needs to be more information.
My grandmother always used to say, don't jump to conclusions.
There you go.
That was a good one. Thanks, Bobby.
Yeah.
Smarter, smarter and smarter. What are we going to talk about next time? Are you going to surprise me?
I think I'll surprise you.
Okay.
All right.
Bye, Kathy.
Bye.